Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía.
This economy has got to work for everyone.
That is former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke talking about the economy during the first of a two-part Democratic debate from Miami. But that second round of the first Democratic presidential debate is less than 2 hours away. Former Vice President and current front runner Joe Biden taking the stage tonight, along with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and California Senator Kamala Harris, among others. Now, we are talking election season politics tonight as we debate the debates. My guests are Howard University political science professor Dr. Niambi Carter and Democratic strategist Nicole Williams. Lines are open. What did you think about last night? Was it a snoozer? Were you engaged? Who were the winners? Who were the losers? What do you anticipate will happen tonight? We want to hear from you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Carter and Nicole, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for having
me. Before we even get into the debates, we've had two really big stories coming out of the U.S. Supreme Court. One would say was a victory for the Republicans. One would say is a victory for Democrats. Gerrymandering and the census question. Let's talk about the gerrymandering thing first, Nicole, and how that applies not only to what happened, but what's happening right now.
Yeah, that ruling from the Supreme Court, it's going to have serious political effects, I think, for years and years to come. Basically, the Supreme Court upheld the different states across the country are able to divide up the different districts any way that they see fit, which is contrary, some would argue, to the Voting Rights Act and really the spirit of the Voting Rights Act in making sure that districts are compact and contiguous. And so it was a bit of a disappointment. I'm from the state of Maryland, and so I know Maryland had a stake in that as well. There was a Maryland case that was part of that whole package of cases. And so it is a blow to the governor, who was hoping that the court would vote in the opposite direction so that he can push forth his quote-unquote nonpartisan commission to kind of redo the districts in Maryland. But we'll see what the outcome is. It's definitely going to have effect on our congressional districts as well as our state legislatures moving forward.
And the other thing, the census question, the question, are you a citizen? Mm-hmm. Essentially, the court, Dr. Carter, said that question should not be on the 2020 census, at least for now. Kind of messy as they even tried to address that and what mm-hmm. happened.
Well, I mean, they essentially said you have to come up with a better rationale. So it could make an appearance. And I think, what Nicole just said is exactly right, because the citizenship question on the census data is what they use to redraw these districts. And so we know this is going to severely undercount Democratic voters, or would be likely Democratic voters. Not to say that undocumented people could vote, but it can have a suppressive effect. And what essentially they did with this gerrymandering case is going to allow them to continue to do that, because Republicans run the table right now, state legislatures. They're the people who redraw these districts. And what the Supreme Court said, you can redraw them any way you want. It's not our business to intervene. That's up to the state. And if we know these states are suppressing Black and brown voters, and we know that they are packing them or scattering them across districts so they can lessen their voting power, this is going to be a real problem for another at least 10 years until there's another redrawing, another census and another time to redraw legislative districts.
Which also brings us back to the big issue about who you're going to elect as president in 2020. There are 20 Democratic candidates. Who knows? By tomorrow night, there may not be 20 Democratic candidates, depending on the money and who did what and who did well and who did not. I started off with this soundbite from Beto O'Rourke, the former congressman from Texas. Mm-hmm. And I think he surprised the other bilingual candidates. The look on Cory Booker's face last night.
It's now a meme.
Yeah, you know, man, you took my stuff. But what do you think, Dr. Carter? Kind of give me an overall, first of all, of what you thought about last night.
You know, it was livelier than I anticipated. I didn't expect much for the first night. Now, there was no big pylon, but I will say Julian Castro surprised me. He was always, I thought, a very formidable candidate. He always knows the issues, but I didn't think he had a charisma or charm about him, but last night he brought the fire. And I mean, I didn't pay as much attention to Elizabeth Warren, in part because Elizabeth Warren's name recognition is so great. We knew she was going to remain among the top of the heap. I mean, and she showed it last night. I mean, I think in the first half she was stronger than she was in the second half. But I would say if there was a clear winner, it was certainly Julian Castro and Cory Booker, with that now meme that is going around talking about he's a whole mood. And I actually thought Booker did pretty well last night. But there were no real surprises except for Julian Castro for me.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think the most lively part of the debate was the interaction between Castro and Beto O'Rourke. And the meme is definitely quite comical. Remind you that Cory Booker is from New Jersey. but, you know, I think it was interesting to kind of hear what some of the lesser known candidates had to say, and how, you know, to see them try to make a name for themselves. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I kind of took away, though, was a little bit annoying, was just people just constantly trying to interject and bully their way into it. And so I'm hoping that tonight the moderators will do a better job in trying to curtail that. I that really bothered me. And you notice it was only the men that did it.
Yeah.
The women, you know, they follow directions. But
but I mean, that is a very gendered behavior, that need to cut in and to get your point across and to say what you need to say, which is crazy on a night when you have 10 people on the same stage. There's just not enough time in 2 hours for everybody to have everything they want to say out. And I will also say Delaney, I thought, shocked me at different points. I was like, okay, Delaney, I wasn't expecting you to have this much to say.
Yeah, well, and I think there were a lot of people who were saying, John who?
Yeah.
You know, from where?
Yeah.
And no shade, but you know, no. I think they were kind of saying the same thing when Martin O'Malley was running, because they know him here, but outside of that, when he was running in 2016, a lot of people were, they did not know.
And it's hard when you have this many candidates to know who everybody is. I mean, you got governors, you got senators.
And that was 2012, by the way.
Yeah, and you got mayors, and you got all kinds of folks in here right now. I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way. But I'm just saying it's hard to keep track. And then you got Gravel and all these other people kind of late to the race. It's sort of like, I stopped counting it at 21.
That's right, because there were 20 that made the cut, but there are probably about 25 or so, another 5 that are didn't make the cut, that are still, one could argue, in the soup.
Yes.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Democratic presidential debates. What do you think? Who were the winners? Who were the losers? Did you watch? And if not, why not? If you plan on watching tonight, what do you think? Give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me take a couple of issues. This is Castro again.
I'm the only candidate so far that has put forward legislation that would reform our policing system in America and make sure that no matter what the color of your skin is, that you're treated the same, including Latinos who are mistreated too oftentimes by police.
Your thoughts about not only specifically what he said, but the bigger issue of race and how it was addressed last night.
Yeah, I thought he did a really good job in talking about this issue. One of the other things that surprised me was also his comments and command of issues as it related to transgender issues as well as reproductive issues. I wasn't expecting that from Castro, to be quite honestly. You know, he always talks about his stance on immigration and how he has a very robust policy around immigration. But I think it was good to hear him talk about some of those things, specifically as it relates to the issue of community policing and community and violence and things like that. I think that's something that needs to be talked about by really all of the candidates. It was good that he started that conversation. I don't think there was anyone on the stage up until that point that had brought that up. Because we have to keep in mind that definitely the African-American vote within the Democratic Party is a huge voting block that for years and years and years, one can say has been taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And I think this year you see more African-Americans stepping out saying, look, we're not just going to vote because you've asked us to. You need to give us a reason to come out and vote for you. And now, because we do have a plethora of choices, we have a lot of options on the table. And if you want our vote, then you need to say why we should come out and vote for you, why we should support you as a community.
And I would say, you know, and Julian Castro, not to just give him all the praise, but he was one of the first candidates when he came out the gate talking about reparations, which is now why everybody is kind of having to talk about reparations. And I think he reclaimed that space because I think he got a little lost in that conversation. But he said the names. He said Sandra Bland and he said Laquan McDonald. And I think that is a rarity that you hear a candidate, and you hear people say things like Black Lives Matter, but to really think about and talk about sort of the crisis with the trans black community in particular. I mean, other people kind of joined in, but he was the one kind of at the forefront of all those issues. And I have no doubt that some of that has to do with his staff. I mean, he has a black woman who is very prominent on his staff, and everyone can't say that. So I think part of what gives him some of that age, and this is why it's important to diversify your staff's candidates if you hadn't thought about it, is that people can help you make those connections, because you're right. On immigration, he is very clear. And because he's Latino, people would identify him with that issue anyway. And he's from Texas, etc. But to be able to kind of speak broadly about racial justice, I think, is an important thing. And others have done it. People talk about poverty. People like to talk about these other kinds of things. But he was very clear about race. And I think that is going to ultimately be a strength, because I think for some, they think that if you come out too strong about race, then you're going to alienate these white men in the Midwest. And I think that's why people were loving Tim Ryan and Amy Klobuchar, because they were going to give you that Midwestern white savior narrative. Unfortunately, though, the Democratic Party doesn't look like that anymore. I don't even know that that person exists. Sanders talked about it a lot, but I don't know that that's true, because the person who is going to be interested in a Democrat and then say, oh, well, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, I don't know, in protest or in disgust, I don't know that there's anything that you could say to make them feel okay. And putting racial justice on the back burner is a non-starter, particularly for black voters. We have done it a lot. We've done it too often. And there's never going to be a good time. There's always an election around the corner. There's never a good time to talk about racial justice issues. And they don't just affect black people. Right. They affect Native Americans, Latinos, Asians, right? And people forget, when we talk about reparations, that's not a black-owned issue.
No.
9/11, those 9/11 first responders were seeking reparations, right? I mean, we talk about this with all kinds of communities, and why when you talk about these things for black communities, that seems to be sort of like that's the no-go zone, right? That was sort of what Bernie Sanders had been saying. Elizabeth Warren has been talking about it also very directly and very concretely, because every group is not going to need the same kind of redress and the same kind of attention, because everybody's oppression looks different.
202-319-7810 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Democratic presidential debates. The first one is down. There's one more tonight, at least of the first. even kind of hard to figure out, you know, where we are right now. The first 10 candidates are down, I should say, and now there's another 10 tonight. But we want to hear what you think about it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Here's the thing, when you talk about issues of race, two points I want to make. you could say, well, it's that there's an argument that says, well, now is not the time to talk about the black issues, the racial issues, what have you. But you could argue that the racial issues as it relates to white people were front and center in 2016, and that is why Donald Trump was elected. You may remember that during this same time, during the Republican debates, where you had a lot of people who were afraid to say publicly that they were supporting Donald Trump, which is why everyone from President Obama to moderates to some Republicans said that Donald Trump was not going to win. And so now here we are. He is president. And these race issues are not only just front and center every day in the news, but they are a part of this debate. But here's the second piece. We now have, in addition to issues about black people, reparations and the like, we have at least, and tell me if I'm wrong here, at least three fluent bilingual Democratic candidates. I think that is just impressive to me. That just blew my mind last night. I didn't understand what they were saying, but I was just saying, this is America.
Right. This is America. And I think we've been hesitant as a country to really talk about race and talk about what we know occurs, but mm-hmm. are afraid to speak about it. And I think the past, several years during the Trump presidency has really brought out kind of the need for us to have this conversation. You know, just because Mitch McConnell's comment, just because we've had a black mm-hmm. president doesn't mean all the issues for African Americans in this country are complete, over, and solved. And I think if we as a country as a whole is going to move forward, we have to deal mm-hmm. with this. Whether you're white, brown, black, Haitian, Puerto Rican, Japanese, whatever. In order for us to be able to move forward in a positive manner as a nation, we have to be able to come to grips with this. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a way in which we give whiteness a pass. But like you said, it's a racial identity and it's operating. And I think one of the things that many of the candidates have been trying to do is sort of build this populist momentum, particularly around poor whites who've been shafted by this presidency and many others before, who are happy to take their votes, who are happy to beat that drum of white victimization and leave them out in the cold. They've not restored manufacturing jobs in Youngstown, Ohio, as Tim Ryan rightly pointed out. They've not given you a better standard of living. You're still getting sick and dying in West Virginia and places where you can't even get good dental care. So these people, many of the Republicans, I'm not saying Democrats are a panacea, but many of these Republicans have been selling white folks a fake bill of goods and have not delivered on their promise to make their lives better. But they have given them a lot of security in their whiteness. And now they're playing on their insecurities about the nation changing. So the fact that we do have candidates speaking Spanish speaks to the fact that the country is different than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Let me take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rick from Hagerstown. Rick, stay with us. Don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to hear from you. This is important. And maybe that says something about where we are right now, because if I'm not hearing from you, will the candidates hear from you? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking election season politics as we debate the debates. My guests are Howard University political science professor Dr. Niambi Carter and Democratic strategist Nicole Williams. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Want to know what you thought about the debates last night. Did you watch them? Will you watch tonight? Let's go to Rick. Rick calling from Hagerstown. Thanks for calling, Rick. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I want to start off by saying that I am a 34-year-old white male who also happens to be a homosexual.
Okay.
And I'm concerned about the narrative that marginalized people are using to express our concern with the narrative that's being presented to us by the candidates. I am 100% in agreement with you about the racial inequality in this country. I think, however, that we need to join together as marginalized peoples. And I think that that's one of their strong points, right? Like, the opposition likes to pit us against each other. And I want strong black women, strong black men, strong gay men, strong white gay men, strong gay white women, you know? I think we all need to band together and our party not let it become separated. And I say that because watching the debate last night, I feel like Beto, for example, it was the calmness and the stillness is discredited. It's all about the argument. It's all about, oh, he made a great point or she made a great point or no, I'm going to fight that point. And as normal people who live in this country and depend on the policies that are developed by our democracy, stillness is a really valuable thing. So I prefer to look at the candidates who are still and resolute instead of the ones who cause a ruckus. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Lynn?
Well, I mean, I think part of this, and I appreciate Rick's point, which is this is a contest right now, and this is the goal, and sometimes this is the way we go back and forth because we're trying to show distinctions between ourselves and our competition. It isn't a necessarily vitriolic or negative thing. It is just what it is because they're slugging it out, trying to make it to the general election. And unfortunately, that's what happens. The fortunate side, I think, is that Rick is probably one of the few people who actually participate in and watch primary debates. Not a lot of people do. And by the time the general election rolls around, most people have forgotten. And this is the first. We have another in July, another in August. We have a long time to do this. So I appreciate what he's saying, like rancor isn't necessary. And I mean, I think it got spirited. I don't think it got personal. No one attacked anyone. But people are going to be hard on the policy. And to his point about bringing people together, I think he should look at Reverend Barber and what he did just a couple weeks ago with the repairs of the breach at Trinity when they had the Poor People's Campaign, when they had all the candidates come through and not in a debate format, but talk about how we can help people in poverty, regardless of race or sexual orientation or region. And I think that was a really great illustration of the thing he wants to see. So if you want to do this kind of work, and Democrats are going to do this when their candidate is finally elected, they're going to try to herd up all these folks. I mean, not herding is not a good
yes, it is.
Term. They're going to try to put all these diverse collections of people together because it is in their interest that we are, once this is all said and done, able to come together and unify around a candidate. That's what they want. But right now, especially in a crowded field like this, there's going to be some elbowing. People are trying to rise to the top of the pile. Some people are trying to emerge. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be a lot more slugging as we move forward. But last night, there were no big pylons, which makes sense because there was no need. But I mean,
let me say this, you know, to both of you and Nicole, I want your thoughts about it. Obviously, Rick has a brain, you know, Rick is, but, and I say that tongue in cheek in that Rick is listening for ideas. Mm-hmm. He's listening for policy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's listening for how is this going to affect me?
Mm-hmm.
I would venture to say, Rick, that you are not sitting there with hot buttered popcorn waiting on the zingers.
You're absolutely correct.
He's looking for information.
Right.
But the donors are, and And many, many, many Americans, as we saw in 2016, are looking to be entertained. Yeah, they're looking to be inspired, whatever that may mean.
Right.
May I interrupt you?
Yeah, go ahead real quick, and then I'm going to have to let you go.
I'm sure that's fine. You're absolutely correct. The donors are the ones that, they want to be entertained. They want popularity. They want the populace. That being said, until we band together as marginalized peoples, which, by the way, makes up 60% of the United States of America, until we band together and decide we're protecting each other and we'll accept nothing less, that's going to continue to happen. It's always going to be a show. It's never going to be who's the best candidate for the people. Okay. And that's all I'm saying. And I love your show, by the way.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. And I'm glad to have a fan or two in Hagerstown. Thank you so much. Nicole, you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to simply comment that, unfortunately, campaigns have to come up with some type of metrics to show, like you said, the donors and their supporters that they're doing a good job. And so they're like, I'm trending on Twitter or, I was the most Googleable candidate last night. So donate $50 to my campaign. And you'll see, I think I'm on everybody's email list. So I get all the emails and kind of what they're spinning about themselves after the debates. And, they need something to try to hook, line, and sinker you in until you get to the people like Rick who are looking for the substance. And going back to the substance, I think that's one of the reasons why you do see Elizabeth Warren really moving up in the polls, because she is one of the candidates that have come out with very concrete, detailed policies on a number of different issues.
And she's not dealing with the personality stuff, right?
No. She isn't. And I appreciate that. I think she is like, yes, I am the professor. I am the nerdy former college professor. And she is taking it and owning it because she's being her authentic self. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's one of the things that I try to look for when I'm looking at the various candidates. Are you the same now as you were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 30 years ago? And I think Elizabeth Warren has done a very good job in saying, you know what? This is my reputation. This is what people perceive me as. So I'm just going to roll with it. Mm-hmm.
And I think she's embraced her policy position. She has not backed off of Medicare for All. She has not backed away from her tuition-free college plan. She has not decided to modify that or moderate that, at least right now, for anybody. And I do think that that is important, that she is consistent and stay consistent. I would say a number of other candidates have. I mean, some have made big leaps in terms of policy. I mean, coming back to Tim Ryan, he used to be anti-abortion, and he's got a change of heart.
Right.
But I think Warren is good.
Let me go to Harold, my namesake, calling from Forestville. Thanks for hanging on, Harold. What's on your mind?
It's not Harold. It's Al. But that's
Al, okay. Blame it on the heart of our audio producer there now.
that's fine. No, I'm listening to the political conversation, and one of the things I think it keeps getting missed in conversation as a human being, as a person, and as we go to these political shows, that's what they've become, just like you guys are saying. Why is it that nobody stands up, talks about the history of people, and starts talking about this president that we have and get him out of this office? This man, I'm a history nut, trust me when I tell you that. This man is following the exact example of Adolf Hitler and how he persecutes homosexuals, people of color, retarded people, anybody that has what is a non-white conformity. He steps up on that. Now, I understand that you can't always bash your opponent when you're in the political environment. But somebody has to bring forth the fact that this guy has done nothing but tear this country down, and we have to move beyond that.
Let me stop you there, because I think you made several points even yesterday. The last prosecutor in the Nuremberg trials came out with some really harsh things to say about Donald Trump, which I thought was, when you're literally reaching back to someone who persecuted, the Nazi trials, to talk about what's happening today and that person to still be relevant, which I think is really interesting. But I think everything that Harold has said. It's still up there. Al, forgive me. Everything that Al has said has been said. Mm-hmm. This is now 2019. So everything that he said, we know. Every person that was standing on stage last night and that will be standing on stage tonight will be standing there not only hopefully with the charge of, if they become president, making the United States a better place, mm-hmm. but also to change who is in the White House. Mm-hmm. And yet, I don't believe I heard as much about Donald Trump last night as I thought I would.
That's true. I mean, I know Amy Klobuchar kind of tried to make the distinction that, you know, she's won in a very red state in districts where Trump won by double-digit points, and she's won in those districts as well. I think you saw the same thing from Congressman Ryan trying to make the argument about why he should be the nominee. So I think you did see some of that last night. But we have time. There's the general election to attack Trump every day, all day. You know, I think right now people are really just trying to differentiate themselves from some of the other candidates. And so his name was mentioned some, and I think we'll see that again. But right now, I think the focus is really on the individuals and kind of what they bring to the table.
And I think, and even when he's not being talked about, he's being talked about. If you're talking about the economy, if you're talking about immigration policy, you're talking about Donald Trump, even if you don't say his name. And I think, you know, the exercise right now is a little bit different. It's not about, I mean, like you said, we're all in agreement that he is a disaster as a president. He is dangerous. He is unethical and immoral. But that wasn't the place to make that case. People are making the case that they're going to be the best candidate to beat him. And so everybody talking about how many ways he's wrong is sort of the news that we all know. The news we need is who's going to be the best candidate out of here. And that's what everybody is trying to do, as Nicole rightfully pointed out. They're trying to make the case that they are going to be the best candidate to unify this Democratic base and let this man out of office.
Al, thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I believe this is Roz calling from the DMV. What's on your mind?
Well, hello, sir and ladies. I wanted to thank you for having this program to help educate us. I wanted to give a compliment really quickly to Howard alum Yvette Carnell, who is a poli-sci major and has been educating us across the country regarding American descendants of chattel slavery with ADOS101.com. I think that for us as foundational Black Americans who built the country, we need to make sure that our candidates stay on point. I'm looking forward to Marianne Williamson, because she is the only candidate that's really talking about growing the Black community with her reparations package. She spoke with Dr. Sandy Darity from Duke University, and she's really digging into her feet in the sand for us as far as at least to have that conversation. Everyone else, they're talking reparations. I don't know what they mean by reparations, but I think we need to really try to push our candidates and our congressmen and, you know, about our, you know, something that's going to be tangible for us.
But let me stop you there, Roz, because you said, well, you don't know what they mean by reparations. As I remember last week, even with all of the big brains that were speaking on Capitol Hill and those questioning them, you could still say the same thing. They don't know what they mean about reparations either. Whether it's 40 acres and a mule or 40, you know, 40 horsepower motorcycle and 1 acre. No one knows about that. And I think that, if asked tonight, of each candidate, you will get twice as many different answers. So I think that, you know, that is something that we're going to continue to muddle through, because indeed, not to go off on a tangent, but last week's hearing in Congress was not about to decide reparations. It was about to decide to pass a bill so that we could talk about reparations, which is what we were doing before the bill was considered anyway. So I think that's it's a tough row to hoe, but I suspect that we're going to continue to do that. Anybody have some thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about reparations is it has... It's not a thing. It's not one thing. It can actually be a complex of things. Right. I think the focus has a lot been on the check and on money. And that may very well be. I think Williamson has said anything less than $100 billion will be unsatisfactory. And that's fine. But we don't know that that is the upper limit where we can go. Right. And so we are only talking about a panel or a commission to study it, like they had a commission on race relations in the 90s under Bill Clinton. What happened with that? Nothing. So we are really, I think, putting the cart before the horse to a certain extent, because monies are not going to be released by the federal government before this panel happens. And we could be talking about more than just a check. I think what the caller was referencing was a particular way of talking about who would be the beneficiaries of this. And I think that's another separate kind of question. I think it's an important question. And I think it will be part of that discussion. But we haven't even gotten to the place where the government is willing to even say, yeah, we need to really think about this and study it in any deep way. And that's all this bill is doing. And I think lots of people have various ways of deciding what that can look like. And we can look to other countries that have actually done this, not just our own. I mean, we did it with Japanese internment. We've done it slightly with some Jewish communities. We've even done it with some Black communities at the state levels, right? So Rosewood in Florida being a prime example. But I mean, this idea of being hung up on what that money is going to be or what that check is going to be or who it's going to go to, I think is a little premature when we don't even have a government that is willing to let that bill make it out of Congress, right? It might make it out of the House, but it's probably going to die in the Senate.
I would argue that the only money that we're going to see released in any sort of reparations would be Harriet Tubman on a $20 bill, and it doesn't look like that is going to be happening anytime soon. I'll let you speak about this particular issue, Nicole, before we move on. And Ross, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Ross, for that comment. And I agree. I mean, right now, there's a lot of conversations and there's a lot of different theories about how reparations should be done, whether it's, you know, tax credits or actual payments or, you know, assisting individuals in terms of creating small businesses in certain communities and things like that. So I think we have a ways to go. I mean, first we need to get, like my colleague said, you know, the government to first of all admit that a wrong was done and admit that there needs to be some type of governmental
repair
of that wrong.
And whether or not any of these candidates will be able to give us an answer about that, I think is going to be a struggle. Well, we do have another flock, herd, pack of candidates tonight.
Yes.
Nicole, who do you think is going to shine tonight? Joe Biden, definitely the front runner. Is he going to shine? How do you think Kamala Harris is going to do? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited to. I actually am excited to see Kamala Harris tonight, just to kind of see how she's going to present herself. I think that would be really interesting and to see. Bernie Sanders is going to be Bernie, and so that's always very entertaining as well. But also, one of the things I also want, Yang is a very interesting character. He's the first Asian American to be a Democratic, put himself forward for the Democratic nomination for president. He's a smart, savvy businessman. And so I think, I say he's someone to maybe kind of watch to see how he responds tonight. I think a lot of people are kind of underestimating him. So he's one of he's my sleeper pick.
He's a sleeper.
Okay. So I agree that, of course, we're we're going to be paying attention to the front runners. So mm-hmm. we're going to be paying attention to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for sure. I want to see what Kristen Gillibrand is going to do mm-hmm. because I think she's gotten a little bit lost in the heap and see if she can pull something out. I think this is going to be an important night for Pete Buttigieg. I don't know if he's going to be able to maintain his status as the fifth runner-up so far. I think, you know, it's been interesting because I feel like he's totally a media creation in a certain way. And so it'll be interesting to see if he's able to stand out in a really esteemed field. I mean, you have a person who's a former vice president. You have two senators, one of whom has already done this before. Mm. So you have some stiff competition. And not to mention, you have other lesser known candidates, Hickenlooper, Bennett, and others who are trying to sort of penetrate and make a name for themselves. So they have a lot at stake here, too. So those are the folks that I'm going to actually be looking forward to seeing. I don't know that the other candidates, I mean, Yang, I think, has been a little bit of a gadfly and a little bit of a wild card for the Democrats so far. I don't know what he's going to do. I think he'll be entertaining at the very least.
Well, now, and two things. I think what you said about Buttigieg was really profound because I never saw it that way. But immediately when I heard you say that he could, he's essentially a media creation, some could argue, is because he's got a great story.
Yes.
And that's the thing. Even in the news business, we're always looking for great stories to tell, mm-hmm. whether we think the people are heroes or villains or mm-hmm. somewhere in between. But, you know, he was a military officer. You know, he's this, you know, mayor of this working class city. And, he's gay and he's married right. and he's got this stiff upper lip, but mm-hmm. he's in this quiet passion, all of this. And then Black Lives Matter because you shoot a black man uh-huh. in South Bend and all of a sudden the world falls apart.
Well, but remember BuzzFeed reported about his 1,000 homes in 1,000 days because he's basically a technocrat and he was going to demolish these homes. They were largely in black and Latino communities right. and BuzzFeed broke that story. Didn't get a lot of traction, but I think it was a little bit of chink in his armor. And then he fired the black police chief. I mean, he's had a lot of missteps about race. And most of his support is not from racial and ethnic minorities. It's from white, wealthy folks on the coast, right? So he enjoys a level of popularity. And I think you're exactly right, because he ticks all the boxes. Right. Veteran, young, good looking, Rhodes Scholar, and all this stuff. But I'm like, you know who else is a Rhodes Scholar? Cory Booker. You know who else is a veteran? Tulsi Gabbard. Mm-hmm. So his story, when you start to look at him in comparison to other people, is not that interesting. He's a mayor of a small town in Indiana. South Bend is not big. He's been an executive of that town, but he hasn't been an executive of much of anything. But he's interesting. People like his narrative. And I think now that Julian Castro has broken through, that perhaps he'll be interesting to people, too.
Right.
And he told a little bit of his own story about his mom being an immigrant and how her sons have had all these successes. And I think that can be just as compelling. But it helps that he is good looking. It helps that he knows how to frame himself. I mean, Pete Buttigieg knows social media. He mm-hmm. understands the optic. He gets it. In a way that I don't know that some of his competitors do. We can't do politics the way we used to.
Yeah.
It's not the same game anymore.
But, you know, Nicole, Eric Swalwell has been mm-hmm. swallowed.
Yes.
I mean, the only time that you see him is on CNN.
Yeah.
It seems. And while that FaceTime may be good for him, but again, it's one of those Eric who,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's been kind of swallowed up, you know, by the pack.
Yeah. I mean, I was honestly kind of surprised he made the cut because, you know, you have to meet all these different thresholds. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You haven't heard a whole lot from him or about him, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. I imagine he's going to try to push his way through to try to get heard tonight. So it'll be interesting to see. One thing I will say about him, I think he was in Baltimore, I want to say maybe 2 months ago, talking about gun control. And that's kind of been one of the main main parts of his platform, is really talking about the need for sensible gun control, and things like that, which a lot of the other candidates have talked about. But the fact that he actually decided to come to Baltimore and sit down and talk with individuals within the community that have been negatively affected by gun control, I thought spoke volumes about his character and him as a person. Now, mind you, that news story didn't get any traction, but he is someone who he's like Ryan. They're both kind of under the radar, but they do have a narrative and something to bring to the table.
I mentioned Kamala Harris before. Don't know. I like her, but I don't know. She was a prosecutor. Yeah, yes. She was tough. But this is a different. This is just kind of. I almost want to say she's so happy going through this, and seems to be dealing with this. I don't know. I'm just. You want her to make it past. You want her to really be in the thick of it. Mm-hmm. As a black woman, mm-hmm. as a political star. Is she being taken seriously?
I think she is. I mean, I think she has proven herself to be. I mean, she's been at or near the top of polling most of the time. Now, she's not polling, the top 30%, but she's been in the mix. Her name has been there the whole time. And I do think that says something. And I think she'll make the duration, particularly as the DNC starts to raise the limits for the unique donors you need to have and all those things. Other people are going to fall away just by virtue of the fact that they can't make that. I think it's now 130,000 unique donors. Donors that you're going to need this time around was 65,000. And so I think she will continue to be there, but as your you don't know is meaning you don't know what don't, she's I, like, I mean, what she's
I
into.
Just, yeah, I don't feel
like you know her at all.
I don't.
And I think that's been a common feeling about her is that it's been very, I don't want to say personable because I think that has a very gendered dimension. Mm-hmm. Because there is an expectation that women will be open and forthcoming in ways that men aren't. And I think she
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that she has been that there is a facade.
I think she's
very warm. I think Joe Biden is very warm. I think that Elizabeth Warren is also warm, which I think those are characteristics that President Obama, another person, I think those are characteristics where you want to like, person. But what's next?
But that's the thing. You may like her, but I will say this. You don't know a lot about her. I mean, you know her kind of general story.
Right.
But I think Kamala Harris has had a sort of arm's length feel to her, even if she doesn't intend to. Mm-hmm. And that might just be her personal style. I think she will have to develop more of this openness to bring people in because I think the pool, even among black voters, is a little varied because on the She the People poll that just came out this last week, Elizabeth Warren was polling first choice, right? Even though these are largely black and Latino and other women of color. So she does not have that community sewn up either. And I think lots of people are rooting for her. I mean, of course, we're rooting for her at Howard as an alum, and she's an alum of my department, that kind of thing. But I do think she does have a bit of a, it's not insincerity, but I do think that there is a not a closedness, but maybe that the door is halfway cracked and we want it to come open a little bit more. And maybe as she gets into more of the policy talk, that will help people get a better sense of what her priorities are. I mean, she did get dinged initially because of what she did as a prosecutor and because of sort of her opinions about like keeping people incarcerated for nonviolent offenses because the jails needed people to clean up.
Right. And maybe the thing I don't know is I don't know if she were to get the nomination, if she could be Donald Trump. And I think ultimately that is the question that everyone is asking about all 20 of these people. I've got to go. I appreciate the big brains at this table, Dr. Niambi Carter and Nicole Williams. Love you both. Gosh, I need an extra hour just to get through all of this. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, June 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.